Hi there everyone, and welcome back to It's 21, where me, Rob,
me, Andy,
and me, Lizzie,
all look back at every single UK number one of the 21st century, from January 2000 right through to the present day. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Hits21UK. That is at Hits21UK. And if you're not into social media and you just want to email us, then it is Hits21podcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for joining us again. We are currently looking back at the year 2006, but not for much longer. It's our penultimate episode of 2006. We'll be covering the period between the 19th of November and the 23rd of December. So we're taking you right up to Christmas Eve Eve. last week, we had a little announcement, didn't we? That the poll from 2 weeks ago was going to run on a little further. That we kept up the My Chemical Romance and Scissor Sisters poll going, just so we could decide a once and for all winner. After they both received feverish reaction, very enthusiastic, which was great, really great to see. So McFly cleaned up last week, no such problems there. Stargirl just shot like a rocket to the win. But
get in, boys.
Between My Chemical Romance and Scissor Sisters, by one vote, it was the Black Parade, My Chemical Romance.
Oh, so, wow.
Scissor Sisters, a very, very, very close second, and would have won, I think, in basically every other week had My Chem not been there to stop them. Who knows? That person who voted for Razorlight may have liked the Scissor Sisters more than My Chemical Romance and might be, you know, might be a little angry with themselves right now if it was a remotely serious poll, so I'm sure they're not.
I'm just made up that we've actually done that democracy has decided that they just needed a little longer. Like, I feel like we could solve all sorts of problems with this. Should we do Bush versus Gore now and decide who wins that?
All right then, it is time to press on with this week's episode. And as always, it is time for some news headlines from around the time that the songs we're covering in this episode were at number one in the UK. Alexander Litvinenko, a prominent critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, dies in London after being poisoned. He was 43 at the time of his death. 15 years later, the European Court of Human Rights ruled that Russia was responsible for his death and ordered the country to pay £87,000 in damages. So that's a price on his life, I suppose.
Five women aged between 19 and 29 are found dead in Ipswich over the course of 2 weeks. A local man, Steve Wright, later named the Suffolk Strangler by the British media, was eventually found guilty of their murders. He was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole.
And in China, Bao Zhijun, the world's tallest man at the time, rescues a group of dolphins from certain death after using his exceptionally long arms to retrieve dangerous plastics from their stomachs. Bao, who stands at 7 feet 9, succeeded where experienced vets and doctors had failed. I say tallest man at the time because he was eventually surpassed by a Turkish man named Sultan Kozen, who stands at 8 foot 2.
Oof. Wow.
I'm sorry, but that whole story, just what? Like, where is the movie adaptation of this? This is just a wonderful story. That's just heartwarming on every level. That's fantastic.
The films to hit the top of the UK box office during this period were as follows. After Casino Royale finishes a three-week run at the top, Happy Feet reaches the summit. Also for 3 weeks, before 2006 is closed out by Night at the Museum.
Stars in Their Eyes broadcasts its final episode, presented by Kat Deeley. Are you ready for some winners, everyone? We have some winners here. So,
this year,
Matt Willis wins I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Zara Phillips is named BBC Sports Personality of the Year. Mark Ramprakash wins the fourth series of Strictly Come Dancing. No, me neither. And Leona Lewis wins The X Factor, defeating Ray Quinn in the final. We will be hearing little bits about both of those soon, I'm sure. Yeah.
Mark Ramprakash was a cricketer, right?
Yes, he was. English cricketer. It was a bit of a time for cricketers in Strictly, to be honest, because Darren Goff only won the year before. So it was a bit of a time for cricketers.
Well, speaking of sports, Nintendo officially releases its brand new console, the Wii. The console came with wireless controllers, featured games such as Wii Sports, and became Nintendo's best-selling console. until it was surpassed by the Nintendo Switch in 2021. To this day, the Wii is the seventh highest selling games console of all time. And I think I got one that same Christmas, come to think of it.
Yeah, I got mine for Christmas.
Yeah,
it was just good times.
All the family were coming around to play with it that Christmas. It's just wonderful.
That, Andy, what you have touched on about the whole family coming round is exactly why I'm not much of a gamer guy. You know, I'm not loyal to any particular console. Whenever I get a console, I normally get like two or three games and then play them incessantly. I'm not one who likes to keep up with games or anything like that. But I have always had so much respect for Nintendo, because where it would have been easy for them to carry on down the GameCube, Game Boy, DS kind of solo gaming route, they seem to pivot towards family gaming. And they made a success of it in a way that Sony and Microsoft really didn't. Because I remember the first year that everybody got Kinect, and I remember the first year that everybody got PlayStation Move, but I don't remember the second year at all.
It's
Whereas the Wii is still, you know, the concept of the Wii is still very popular with the Switch.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Andy, the UK album charts, how are they looking towards the end of 2006?
Yeah, so we've got a few kind of also-rans and then one big beast this week. We've got three albums to see out the year. First of all, we've got 25 by George Michael, which is named for the 25th anniversary of his career, and it's a best of. That's three best ofs in a row, by the way, that have been at number one for the past month. Basically, the whole of November was just best ofs. It's a very quiet time on the charts. Anyway, that's toppled by The Love Album by Westlife. Just, that title's just gross, isn't it? And that was number one for 1 week and went three times platinum. Now we've got the big beast, which is Take That with Beautiful World, which is Take That's first album in 11 years. Take That back, everybody. And they went to number one for 6 weeks, all the way through to the middle of January 2007. So we'll be mentioning this again in a couple of weeks' time. But that went nine times platinum. It was an absolutely stonking hit. And remains their highest-selling album of Take That's whole discography. I'm sure we'll be mentioning a couple of the singles from that in some time. I'm not sure when, but I'm sure we'll be mentioning a couple of the singles as we move on. Just one point on this then, as we finish out the year, that I previously said Eyes Open by Snow Patrol, which went eight times platinum, was the highest selling album of 2006. Now, Beautiful World went nine times platinum. However, within 2006, it was Snow Patrol with Eyes Open that outsold it. And as time has gone on, Beautiful World has now kept going and outsold it. So I guess the lesson we've learned there is that Take That were stayers and Snow Patrol were more of a flash in the pan. But so Take That did claim their crown in the end. I guess all those who followed them just needed to have a little... Can't think of the word. No, and that's your lot.
I listened to that again today, Beautiful World. Just, you know, in preparation. Because I used to listen to it a lot when it was out. One of the first albums I ever had in full on my little iPod. I don't like it as much as I used to. I think a lot of the vocal processing on it is... I mean, if you listen to the title track of Beautiful World, all the vocal smoothing that they've had to do to, what's his face, the other one, Howard, Jason, whichever one, is not great. My favourite Take That album, though, is probably Progress. I think Progress has probably been my favourite for a little while. Lizzie, the US charts, how are they doing right now?
Yeah, I sort of wish Westlife had done a follow-up called The Hate Album. I have two singles to mention this week, including the US Christmas number one single for 2006. First up is Not That, it's Akon's first Billboard number one single, I Wanna Love You, featuring Snoop Dogg. It stayed at number one for 2 weeks in early December, and narrowly missed out on the top spot in the UK, peaking at number three in February of 2007. However, we do get to hear about a different Akon song in just a little bit, so stay tuned for that. Next up is the Christmas number one for 2006, in America at least. It's Beyoncé with Irreplaceable.
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice. It stayed at number one for 10 consecutive weeks.
Ooh.
And was her fourth number one single as a solo artist. It was eventually certified 6 times platinum in the US, but back here in the UK, it peaked at number 4, while Fedi LeGrand's Put Your Hands Up for Detroit was at number 1. So over to albums, and I'm going to run down the rest of the number 1 albums for 2006 here, so that I can go straight into the top 10 singles and best performing album of 2006 on our Christmas episode. So without further ado, we have Now 23 by various artists. 1 week at number 1. Failed to chart in the UK, for obvious reasons. Then we had Doctor's Advocate by The Game. 1 week at number 1, peaked at number 21 in the UK. Then we have Kingdom Come by Jay-Z. 1 week at number 1, got to number 35 in the UK.
Yeah, not one of his best.
No, not one of his best, but I thought he would have done better than that. Anyway, then we have Light Grenades by Incubus. 1 week at number 1. Only managed number 52 in the UK. Then we have The Evolution by Sierra. 1 week at number 1, got to number 17 in the UK. And finally for 2006, we have The Inspiration by Young Jeezy. 1 week at number 1, failed to chart in the UK. I know we sort of rag on America not really having a Christmas number 1, but I would say that Irreplaceable is a great Christmas number 1.
I like the idea of that being the number 1. Where is Father Christmas left by presents, Mum? To the left, everything he got using a box to the left.
Well, thank you both very much for those reports. And we're going to get on to the songs now that we're going to cover this week. Normally, we do 3, but because we've got to make space for a whole episode's worth of space for the Christmas number 1, it's just 2 songs this week. And so the first of those that is up is this. Shady. I see the one, could she be that lady? I feel you creeping, I can see it from my shadow. Wanna jump up in my Lamborghini Gallardo? Maybe go to my place and just kick it like Tybo. And possibly bend you over. Look back and watch me smack that hat all on the floor. Smack that hat, give me some more. Smack that hat till you get sore. Smack that hat. Ready to attack now. Pulling the parking lot slow with the lockdown. Convicts got the whole thing packed now. Step in the club, the wardrobe intact now. I feel it on and crack now. Ooh, I see it's all at back now. I'ma call them, then I put the mat down. Money no problem, pocket full of that now. I feel you creeping, I can see it from my shadow. Wanna jump up in my Lamborghini Gallardo. Maybe go to my place and just kick it like Tybo. And possibly bend you over. And watch me smack that hat all on the floor. Smack that hat, give me some more. Smack that hat till you get sore. Smack that hat, oh. Smack that hat all on the floor. Smack that hat, give me some more. Smack that hat till you get sore. Smack that hat. Okay, this is Smack That by Akon featuring Eminem. Released as the lead single from his second studio album, titled Convicted, Smack That is Akon's 5th single overall to be released in the UK and his 2nd to reach number 1. And it isn't the last time that we'll be coming to Akon on this podcast, or Eminem for that matter. Smack That first entered the UK chart at number 12, reaching number 1 during its 2nd week on the chart, knocking Westlife off the top spot. It stayed at number 1 for just 1 week. In its first and only week atop the charts, it sold 35,000 copies, beating competition from My Love by Justin Timberlake featuring T.I., which climbed to number 2, Patience by Take That, which got to number 4, and Love Light by Robbie Williams, which climbed to number 8. When it was knocked off the top of the charts, Smack That dropped one place to number 2. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 29 weeks. The song is currently officially certified 2 times platinum, so it is double platinum in the UK as of 2023. Andy, kick us off with Akon and Eminem.
Oh, if I have to. I think if I was presented with a copy of this single, I would promptly smack that out of the room. That's how I feel about it, basically. I wasn't, like, completely in loathing of this the first few times I listened to it, but as time's gone on, it's like, yeah, don't like this one at all, because a lot of problems I've had with this era and with similar comparable songs have kind of crystallized around this, to be honest. And this is not the very worst thing we've heard, not by a long shot, but it's just a little bit of an emblem of some issues that I'm having at the moment. First of all, let's talk about those verses, or should I say that verse that is repeated pretty much verbatim, copied and pasted 3 times. And still the song barely scratches its way to the 3.5 minute mark, even with an interlude from Eminem as well. It's just the same verse over and over again with minor changes, or if any changes, to be honest. And it's just very, very dull to sit through. I kind of had this problem with Lonely as well. I don't know if it's something about Akon, that just he has this very listless manner with his vocals that's very kind of inexpressive and makes the verses quite a chore to get through, and you want him to get to that catchy chorus. But I don't find the chorus particularly catchy either, to be honest. That it's kind of quite slight for what it is. And it has some lyrics in it that I think is just a little bit over the line. That's like, smack that until you get sore. Like, ooh, that's not sexy. Don't want to know that. That's like, ugh. And I kind of had that problem with Nasty Girl earlier in the year as well. I feel like the level of these songs sometimes is a little bit more than I like. It's like, it's a little bit like, ugh, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm homosexual. That might be why. And maybe I'm just not the market for this. But yes, not to my taste, to be honest. And then there's Eminem, who basically sounds like someone doing a parody of Eminem, I think. That, like, it's just, again, he sounds completely listless. Just very, very bored to be here. You know, not really much to bring to it. He's in the song for about 25 to 30 seconds and, like, is out of the door as soon as he's in. He just doesn't have much energy about him. In terms of, like, the lyrics as well, and in terms of his place in this song, doesn't really feel like the kind of thing that Eminem usually does, to be honest. It's like, he doesn't really do these sort of interludes where he's, like, talking about getting on the floor, getting women. Like, he's usually got something a bit more to say than that, you know, on his good days at least. So it's like, why does that need to be Eminem? That just completely took me out of the song. And then we get to the mix as well, which I've harped on about so much this past year, well, this past year in the show, that there's just a thing with production in 2006 that just keeps on happening, which I don't like, which is that the middle is completely vacated and some things are really high in the mix, some things are really low, some things are really bassy, some things are really treble, and there's just no filling in the sandwich. And the thing that's really high, really, really trebly for no reason at all, I find, is Eminem's bit. That me and my husband listened to this in the car, and when Eminem came in, I had to turn it down, because suddenly it was just like, right down my ear, which is just really intolerable to listen to. So, like I say, it's not the worst thing in the world. It doesn't really, like, actively offend me, but I just think it just kind of feels a bit cheap and nasty, a bit throwaway, a bit naff in general, to be honest. And given the pretty high quality that we've had recently, kind of have to come down on it for that. No, not a huge fan of this, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Yeah, kind of similar to you, Andy, I'm afraid. I'm going to separate this into, like, 2 sections. An Akon section, and then an Eminem section. Because the Akon section is kind of a waste of a good beat, only kind of. Because the instrumental, as much as I agree that it does suffer from this kind of like 2006, everything is pushed to the far end, and nothing in the middle has any kind of meat to it. It does still sound kind of menacing, sort of mysterious, but still very much danceable. I think it's a decent impression, production-wise, by Eminem, of like a, you know, it's a decent crunk impression. It makes me kind of wish he'd stayed behind the desk after this, instead of moving back in front of the microphone after his hiatus. Akon makes the transition fairly effectively as a singer from, you know, in something like Lonely to this, where he sounds a bit more comfortable behind the mic, more in tune with the atmosphere, at least in terms of how he's approaching it melodically and how he's approaching it in terms of how he's controlling his voice. The song opens with a bridge. You don't get that very often. So worth marking, I suppose.
See, is it a bridge? Like I don't know. I found just the sections of this song.
It just
kind of
lifts into that. I see you creeping. I can see it from my shadow. You know, it kind of
seems more like a. It's more like a pre-chorus.
Yeah, okay. Getting a bit, you know, mixed up with the nomenclature. But still, you know, songs don't often start with that bit of the particular song. I mean, it's kind of a compliment. I guess it's just like going, oh, well, that's sort of interesting compared to everything else. I think if this was a better song, I wouldn't have even mentioned that. It's a shame that I feel the same as you, Andy, that, like, this... What he's saying is a waste of time. I think it's all over the place. Like, all this stuff, like, I feel you creeping, I can see it from my shadow. Like, that's fine. That fits the tone of the song. But then there's all this stuff like, jump up in my Lamborghini Gallardo. And it just feels like it's from a different song. It feels like it's a song about monsters or trying to fit a night together after a blackout or, you know, that sort of thing. But then it kind of just descends into... like lyrics about him just doing somebody doggy style and being very graphic about it, and like, fine, like whatever. But I check out at that point. Like, I'm not against this kind of thing. I'm just not interested in Akon doing this kind of thing. I just feel uncomfortably close to something that I don't want to be near. If you know what I mean. I don't want to imagine Akon. Like you were saying, Andy, smacking it till this person gets sore, whoever he's with. Or give me some more, look back at me. I can't be bothered. I really, really can't be bothered. I do not find this remotely sexy when it is trying to be. Which leads me into Eminem's bit, because fuck me. It sounds like he's being held there at gunpoint. Like, it seems like he had to be convinced to do this anyway, because apparently he said he was bored of featuring on other people's songs. Around this time he said, I'm not going to do it anymore. So Akon flew to Detroit. So he flew from LA to Detroit to get this feature and to record the song. And this really feels like a turning point for this podcast, where Eminem sounds bored. For, like, the first time. Like, Encore isn't great, but rarely does Eminem ever sound bored. He sounds deranged and mixed up and like he's not in full awareness of his faculties and what he's doing, but he's never bored, I don't think. But like he was saying, it does sound like somebody doing a parody, an impression. This is very phoned in. And he started to go for this nasal lower register now that just never, ever fucks off for the rest of his career. It makes him sound like he's half asleep. Like, he still has a relatively bouncy flow, but he doesn't sound like he's skipping through it. It sounds like he's starting to kind of wind down into the hiatus that he's heading for in the next few months. Like, the only bit of this that I actually really remember is the she's like, yeah, because it jumps out at you from the rest of the verse. But, like, the content of Eminem's verses used to be that, like, they were full of moments like that where... every line had like, oh, whoa, did you hear him do that? Oh, how's he done this? Oh, why has he made that noise? You know, all sorts of little things like that. Whereas in this, it's just you have the, she's like, yeah, and I don't know, that's not really enough to build the song off, is it? There's a serious lack of actual content and material in this verse. Like, but hey, I'm sure he got paid loads of money to do it, and it got to number one here, number two in the States. So, I don't know, something worked. It's just not for me, and it feels like an unfortunate kind of canary in the coal mine with Eminem, where it's like every time, almost, he shows up after this on a track, this kind of flow, this kind of inflection, this kind of voice is what he has. And then he dyes his hair black, and it's like, well, it's part of this new character I'm playing. In this, I genuinely had to watch the video again to see whether he still had bleach blonde peroxide hair at this point, because this sounds like another era of Eminem. We've entered another... act, if you will, but this is kind of just between places. It's post curtain call, where he's called time on the first bit of his career, and this is just a thing he's doing to occupy space in the meantime. I think a better idea for this beat comes through in the music video, like lyrically, you know, where Akon kind of spends this hazy night with a woman and he's trying to piece it together, follow her footsteps. He's handing a photograph to a barman and the barman's like, I don't know who she is. And then he sees her and he tries to catch her, and then it suddenly, like, the ending goes all stupid and it turns into like some kind of crime mafia thing. But before that, I feel like the whole thing would be much better and would have a more meta eye if it allowed itself to drip in the gross decadence of the whole thing. But they're not really interested in meta commentary now, are they? They're just interested in smack that, give me some more smack. It's all so superficial, when I feel like something like this, I was also thinking of Nasty Girl. I feel like something like that can work if you lean into how unfortunately gross a lot of strip club environments end up coming across in representations like this. But they're kind of, even the video, it's like they're very much with it. It's kind of like, it reminds me of Mark Kermode's review of Entourage, where it's like, at one point in the film, he thinks, right, it's going to click in a second that this is a satire. Oh, it isn't a satire. I don't like this. And that's kind of how I feel with Smack That. Lizzie, can you offer any more positive insight? Can you stick up for this, or do you not want to?
No, can I fuck? I've got nothing good to say about this. You've pretty much already summed it up, but you've added some good points that I wouldn't have thought of. Like, Rob, I really liked your point about, you know, the bit like creeping up, like it's in the shadow. It, like, there's a sort of different edge there that doesn't come through in the rest of the song, which is just kind of, hey, look, there is an attractive woman over there. And it's a bit of a shame they didn't go down that route. They could have done something like, I don't know, Somebody's Watching Me by Rockwell, that kind of thing, where it's like a dark edge to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they both sound like they're kind of half asleep on this song. With Eminem, I can maybe not excuse it, but I can understand it. Because when we covered Just Lose It, we mentioned that the mid-2000s were a very dark time for him. And he's noticeably more subdued here. And in fact, this would have been at number one about a week before he was on 106 and Park with 50 Cent and G-Unit. And that was the interview where he could barely string together a sentence. And he had like a 1,000-yard stare. And 50 Cent had to step in and answer questions for him. Like, it's a pretty throwaway guest verse, but Eminem himself just sounds completely jacked out, like you say. Particularly towards the end, where he's doing that sort of lower register drawl. So yeah, I think we're just at the cusp of the moment where Eminem officially goes on hiatus, because he is not well. He's not in a place where he can do this sort of thing. And I don't think he's been taken advantage of here or anything. It is his production, ultimately. But I do wonder if there was a sense where someone listened back to this and thought, maybe it's time to, I don't know, have a bit of a break, because you've been working nonstop for like the last 7 years, and also you are an addict. And yeah, maybe hanging out with Akon isn't the move for you in 2007. Maybe you, like, I'm not really keen on Eminem's latest stuff, but I'm glad that he's fucking alive, because at this point, it didn't seem like he would be in 2009. It seemed like he was at the end of, you know, the end of his career, almost. And it's a kind of a miracle that he ever made it back. Anyway, I'm getting off topic. This song, yeah, I find the beat here, there is like a hint of darkness, but there's also this kind of thin, plasticky quality to it. There's no groove like there is on Real Slim Shady. There's not enough sense of building tension like on Lose Yourself. So there's just this overall sense of that'll do with this song. And I feel like, if not for the names attached to it, I can't imagine this being a number one, because it's just not good enough. It never really gets going and just kind of falls flat.
What you've said there has just made me realise that we're less than a year from his overdose, aren't we?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. because I seem to remember reading around the time of Just Lose It, when we covered that, that between sort of like Encore and now, that Eminem is getting like 3 hours of sleep a night, which is a similar place to where Michael Jackson ended up in, where he was addicted to painkillers and was unable to sleep without them and that sort of thing. And Eminem was basically, I have a feeling that there are parts of Eminem's life that he doesn't remember, kind of similar to Matthew Perry, like how Matthew Perry doesn't really remember anything from 1996 to about 1999. Like, he just says, nope, it's gone. Don't remember filming any of season 3 to 7 of Friends. Just could not tell you a word of anything that I said or did or anything.
There's a particular photo from around this time of Eminem, and internet dickheads have decided that he was replaced with a clone in 2007. But in actual fact, he's just so kind of, he's in so deep with the pills that his face has gone all like puffy, and he just looks lost. It is a really haunting photo. And the fact that he comes back in 2009 with, like, you know, the black hair, but he's in shape, it's kind of a miracle that he gets to that point.
Mm. So we will move on to the second and last song that we are going to be covering this week. And the last song we'll be covering in 2006 before the big Christmas number one. And it is this.
Just have a little patience. Still hanging from a love I lost. I'm feeling your frustration. Any minute all the pain will stop. Just hold me close inside your arms tonight. Don't be too hard on my emotions, 'cause I need time. My heart is numb, has no feeling. So while I'm still healing, just try and have a little patience.
Okay, this is Patience by Take That. Released as the lead single from the group's comeback fourth album, Beautiful World, Patience is Take That's 19th single overall to be released in the UK, and then 9th to reach number one. And this is not the last time we'll be coming to Take That on this podcast either. Patience first entered the UK chart at number 4, reaching number 1 during its second week on the chart, knocking Akon off the top spot. It stayed at number 1 for 4 weeks. In its first week atop the charts, it sold 62,000 copies, beating competition from Downtown by Emma Bunton? What? Which climbed to number 3, exactly. In week 2, it sold 38,000 copies, beating competition from Boogie Tonight by Booty Love, which climbed to number 3, that's a shame. And All Good Things Come to an End by Nelly Furtado, which climbed to number 4. In week 3, it sold 38,000 copies again, beating competition from Bing Bang It's Time to Dance by the cast of Lazy Town, which got to number 4, and Wind It Up by Gwen Stefani, which got to number 8. In week 4, its last week at number 1, it sold 31,000 copies, beating competition from, mercifully, 21st Century Christmas by Cliff Richard, which got to number 2, Truly Madly Deeply by Cascada, which climbed to number 4, and You Know My Name by Chris Cornell, which climbed to number 7. That is a shame. When it was knocked off the top of the charts, Patience dropped one place to number 2. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 56 weeks. The song is currently officially certified 2x platinum, so it is double platinum in the UK as of 2023. Is this the first song we've had so far that has spent more than a year in the chart?
Probably. I can't think
maybe
of another. Yeah.
It becomes a more common theme as we go forward, because downloads and streaming and things like that, they enable songs to stay in the chart longer. than they would if it was just a simple case of CD singles and whatnot. But 56 weeks. Wow. Lizzie, do you think it deserved that long?
Well, this song has been called one of the greatest comeback singles in pop history, and I do agree with that assessment in the sense that comebacks in pop are very rarely successful. Like, it's very easy to fall into certain traps, like trying to recapture the magic of your previous work or trying to be something that you're not. I think Take That, avoid both of those traps here and instead make a song that's very much in their wheelhouse but also feels like a natural progression from their previous work. However, I think I accidentally figured out my problem with Take That this week, other than, you know, Gary Barlow being a capital T Tory. To me, this is covert Christian rock.
Ooh. Okay.
It's that sort of Christian rock that you don't notice is Christian rock until you start to read between the lines. It's a kind of stealth approach that makes me uncomfortable for reasons I can't quite put my finger on. Like, all of the hallmarks of covert Christian rock are here. You've got a simple chord progression, you've got a mid-tempo rhythm, you've got non-specific lyrics about trials and tribulations, the use of words like salvation and production that could best be described as big. It's even reflected in the song titles from the comeback, like Patience, Shine, Rule the World, Greatest Day, The Garden. All of them are kind of definitive and broad, and most importantly, easy to apply to religious contexts. Plus, if I wanted to go tinfoil hat, I could point out that their original logo with the two T's makes the shape of a cross, and in the video for this song, they are carrying microphone stands on their backs. We're through the looking glass here, people. But, I don't know, maybe that's too much of a personal gripe, but it does cover some of my overall problems with this song. I find the arrangement of it is tasteful and polished, but there's no room for any intrigue other than a bridge section that just goes straight back to a bigger sounding chorus. It's also quite overproduced in parts, I think, particularly in the latter choruses, where it sounds like there's too many elements packed into a small sound space, and it can be quite fatiguing to listen to, especially if you're trying to pick out individual pieces. And again, it's that same 2006 problem where the lead vocals are buried too low in the mix and it all just kind of clatters in and it's uncomfortable to listen to. Just in general, I find there's a lot of build but there's no real resolution. It's just the same four chord loop over and over again. In that sense, it's an effective comeback song for better and for worse. I think it re-establishes Take That as a relevant pop act, but I also think it's constructed in a way that's too functional to be genuinely affecting. That's not to say it's a bad song or a badly written song or a badly performed song, because I think that's always been Gary Barlow's kind of strength, is sort of simplicity and that low-key feel. But there's something about this which I just don't quite get on with, but I can recognise that this is a good song, and especially a good comeback song, because, well, it's number one, and it was very, very successful. I'm curious to hear what you both have to say about this, though, because I would like to be persuaded otherwise. I feel like I've maybe missed something here.
Well, to be honest, you've picked up on something that I hadn't really considered, but Gary Barlow and Christianity, like, they are two things that they're in. Now I actually sit and think about it, there are more covert Christian songs in his discography. I mean, I say covert, there is a song on an album he did, I forget the name of the album, but it was one of his solo comeback albums. I think it was his first solo album at the time for about 15 years. I think it had that god-awful Fly and Let Me Go song on it. But there was a song on that album that I remember, it was called God.
Right, and okay.
I remember, like, the lyrics are sort of about, like, you know, just keep trying and you'll find the light or whatever. You know, keep going and you'll do this, or, you know, persevere.
But you know what I mean about these very small allusions, like see the light on your face, like let it shine. I can't believe it took as long to click as it did, because he obviously very rarely references God directly in music, but it's all kind of there if you look for it.
Also, for you've now got me thinking of other covert Christian rock songs like The Climb, Miley Cyrus, The Reason, Hoobastank.
Absolutely.
God, they're all Destiny-based, aren't they? But to be honest, a covert Christian rock album that I really love is Riot by Paramore. That is a big covert Christian rock album, because there are so many. Like, it doesn't jump out at you like that. But this is... I'm going to go way off on a tangent here, but we've only got two songs this week, so fuck it. That there is a... Obviously, for Paramore's, you know, a group of their type, if you will, especially as they originated, their audience, you would expect, and it is, primarily white Westerners. But there was a bit of a phenomenon that got explored in, like, the aftermath of their self-titled album in 2013, by which point a lot of the religious stuff had been left behind because Hayley Williams herself had become disillusioned with the religious upbringing that she'd had. She explores that more on Brand New Eyes, which, again, the album title is about looking at things differently, if you will, realizing you've reached adulthood and that things you knew as a kid, like, maybe weren't as you were told. But there was a huge... There was loads of coverage about it. I'll go back and try and find some articles about black Americans really being into Paramore. Now, obviously, I'm not saying that that's necessarily a surprise, but when you think of a stereotypical Paramore fan, that's not where your mind goes initially, because of the kind of music they make and the kind of demographics that that music is associated with. And apparently, a lot of black Americans who were really into Paramore convinced their parents to buy this album, which had the scrawled notepad on the front of it and a word like riot on the front of it. You know, they're very strict religious parents, because they convinced them that Paramore were a Christian rock band, because it's easy to do that. They have songs called Hallelujah and Miracle and Let the Flames Begin and things like this. All these Christian images of fire and destiny. And they are all over the album. There's this song called We Are Broken, which is probably my least favourite Paramore recording, which is a big... It's like a big church number. You know, these modern evangelical church numbers that you get.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now my mind is firing off. My synapses are now connecting about Christian rock songs that I'd never really considered before. But, I mean, we get to discuss The Climb, don't we? But they're all about, like, you know, long journeys and then reaching the end of that journey. There was something I was watching recently, which I actually think is a film that I really love, but I think can be read as a covert Christian story, which is Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Oh, yeah. There's all sorts of Moses allegories in that, even to the point where, like, after he meets the first alien and he gets sunburn on his face... That is what happens to Moses after his first ever discussion with God. He is burnt by the light, if you will. And there's obviously all the stuff with the burning bush. And the main character in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Richard Dreyfuss, being the messenger who is given a mission. And he must go on a pilgrimage to Devil's Mountain to meet the aliens, to see them. And then he is chosen as the humanity's representative, if you will, to spread the word, if you will. And so there's all sorts of things in it like that. So you can tell what I spent Christmas doing, watching old Spielberg movies and stuff. But Andy, we don't have to talk about the Christian rock thing any further. That's just something that's got into my brain. But how do you feel about Patience? Take that.
Well, I've got nothing to add to the Christian rock conversation, except that I think I definitely see what you mean. I think it might be... rather that they just have quite generic aspirational lyrics quite a lot of the time.
Maybe.
I think you can really tell that Gary Barlow wrote the winner song for Geraldine McQueen, because quite a lot of Take That singles from this second era of theirs sound like X Factor winner songs. And I think if you get into kind of generic statements of like, just try so hard to believe, and, you know, it's like that kind of comes across as something you could apply to Christianity, just because it's got that broad, aspirational, higher calling, destiny kind of quality to it. But I don't know if those two things are like deliberately aligning. I don't know. But I see the point with that. As for the actual song, I mean, I really like this. I really do. I think it's a difference between being a teenager, like a sort of turning your nose up at this sort of thing, and being an adult, is that you recognise that songs like this, at the very least, are very well written. And I think that's something that, as much as Gary Barlow is a knobhead and is very tedious to listen to a lot of the time, I will never deny that he, when he's at his best, he is a really excellent songwriter, especially with ballads. His particular trick is bridges, which I'm so sad we'll never get to talk about Rule the World, because the bridge in Rule the World, the stars are coming up tonight bit, is just exceptional, and really elevates that song. He is a great songwriter, and I think with this, I agree with what you said, Lizzie, about how this is in their wheelhouse, but it's kind of doing something a little different with it. I think the main problem I have with it, though, is the production. That by the end, it's really, really heavy on those strings. It's really heavy on the firework rain, you know. And I would turn that down, to be honest. It's Westlife production is what this gets, and it doesn't need
that. It's too much, yeah.
Because it's a good enough song, and it's got good enough hooks in it that people will be singing along, getting caught up in it anyway. It doesn't need those huge, big strings at the end. Yeah, a little bit too much, to be honest. I also have a bit of a pitch of something I would do to this song differently, because this song kind of has two little bridges. It has the "Have a little patience, yeah," where they hit that really nice chord change as it goes into the bridge, and I really like that one. But then it goes right down back to the start with the just a single guitar and "Have a little patience." I would cut that, and I would go straight from the big "have a little patience, yeah" bridge, I would go straight into final chorus, keep that momentum up without a pause, and I think that would improve the song, to be honest. It doesn't need that last little slowdown, to be honest.
I feel like some of the radio edits did that, you know.
I think they probably did. I don't know, like, what you two think of that, because I said this when we were listening to it in the car, me and my husband, and he really disagreed. He thought that little moment of calm really adds to the song. But anyway, I think on the whole, this is really, really good. But my basic statement about this is that everything it does, Rule the World does better. I feel like this is the kind of statement of intent of, yeah, this is the kind of music that we are writing, that Take That are releasing right now. A few more months pass, they do Rule the World. That's this, but better in every way. And I think, for me, Rule the World wholesale replaces this song. But that means that I never really sit down and listen to this very often. And again, when I was sat listening to this in the car, me and my husband, we ended up really belting out, singing along to every word of this song. And that kind of stuck in my head of like, this song kind of, there's something to this then. Like, this is an anthem, you know, that we can sit here and just joyfully sing along to this. And so with that in mind, I would like to just look back on a special little memory of mine that I genuinely didn't remember until a couple of days ago, when I was like, what does this song make me recall from the past? Ah, that's what it is. Where it reminded me of a particular telling off at school I got once, funnily enough, that me and my best friend were in an orchestra, and the school orchestra had done like a performance, but other things were on that night in front of the audience. There was like singers and dancers, etc., like different kind of things that people did in school, but the orchestra stayed on stage while they all did their performances, so we just had to sit there quietly. And a group of girls were dancing to Patience. They did one of those, you know, I'm not going to be nasty about it, but you know, the kind of typical high school choreography where it's like you have to work in a slap and a pickup. There always has to be some sort of like hug that was included in as well, you know, very kind of very high-end commercial dance. But anyway, they were dancing to Patience, and me and my best friend caught each other's eyes from the other side of the orchestra, and we hated the song at the time because you're really edgy, but because it was everywhere, because it was this gigantic hit, we knew every word to it, so we just looked right at each other across the stage and lip-synced the whole thing like really passionately with like power grabs and like emotion, everything, and we're like lip-syncing the whole thing at each other. And I got a tap on the shoulder from my teacher. It was like, you know, the audience can see you, can you please stop doing that? So we accidentally lip-synced for our lives in front of a whole audience while these poor girls were trying to dance. So I feel awful about it, but it was quite a funny memory. But that's the kind of song this is, that even if you hated it at the time, you knew every word of it. And so this songwriting works. It really sticks around. I do think there's a matter of personal taste to it, to be honest, that like that production really doesn't help. And that's my biggest mark against it, but it's very, very well written. It's got a very tight structure to it. It has all the right hits in all the right place, apart from that little cooldown at the end. It's a very, very solid comeback for them, and I think they managed to redefine themselves without reinventing the wheel, and that is not easily done. I completely agree with what Lizzie said, that making a comeback as slick and as effective as this is not easily done. So it's a great comeback for them, but it's not quite their best song ever, I don't think. There's two more, actually, one of which we'll get to cover that I think is better than this. So stay tuned for that, yeah.
So when you're talking about this little rewrite that you would you do like, is this how it goes in your head where it's the, it's been hard, but I have to believe.
Chorus, there. Straight into the chorus, yeah.
Excellent, right, okay, I was just trying to map that out in my head.
I'm going to do it, you know, I'm going to edit it, and I'm going to, like, sick this on Twitter and see what people think. Yeah.
Cool. All right, then. Yeah, kind of like I did with Shane Ward with That's My Goal. If only we'd written them, eh? If only we'd written pop music history around Christmas 2005-2006. patience, yeah. For me, this is the good stuff this week. I think the year proper, just before Christmas starts, really finishes on a good high note here. I actually like a fair portion of Take That's post-comeback singles material, probably more than their pre-breakup material, you know, come to think of it. There's this, I quite like Shine, to kind of give away a bit of our early 2007 coverage. I kind of like Beautiful World. I especially like Rule the World, plus Progress, most of the stuff off that, and I really like The Flood. Kind of lost touch a bit after Three, the album, which was 2013, maybe 2014. Kind of lost touch after that. But I have it on good authority from friend of the podcast, Edward Thomas, that they are still producing decent adult contemporary pop with modern textures and such like. I'm not keen on The Circus, I must say, or Greatest Day, to kind of give that away a little bit. I feel like Greatest Day is like, oh, I need to get something that'll be on the Olympics coverage forever. And sports coverage forever.
Yeah.
But I am into this. Kind of like you two, don't like Gary Barlow, really, for a lot of reasons, but he is a good pop songwriter, and he's a good balladeer, I think. And I think he shows it here. I just find this to be so, I think embalming is the word, you know? It's strident, and it's forceful, but I think it's decorative and sweet. You know, Gary Barlow can kind of just do this stuff in his sleep, but I think he wrote this while he was awake. It's just that little bit better than the stuff he can do in his sleep. I think at the time, its modern comparison points kind of went over my head a bit, you know, like in 2006, but it feels unavoidable now. And I think that's Embrace, specifically their albums Out of Nothing and This New Day. And also bands like Star Sailor, like their big one was Silence is Easy. It just becomes me. I'm not talking about the vocals, but I am talking about the kind of soft rock meets post-Britpop sound that was very popular from about sort of like 1999 to 2004. Robbie Williams himself had been dabbling in this kind of stuff as well. And so Take That, I've cribbed a lot from the things around them while they've been gone, but not in a way that makes it sound like they're necessarily cosplaying. I think that this is sort of superior to those kinds of bands because he's approaching it from a slightly more mature A Million Love Songs Later kind of angle. Like, what if I went back and wrote some of my earlier ballads with the mind of someone who is now in their mid-30s? Like, that kind of feeling. Trying to work them out on piano, construct them from the ground up. Sometimes I think bands like Embrace and Star Sailor, like, they get too lost in their sound and stop focusing on the writing. They were part of a scene, and so they conform to the scene instead of just knocking out good tunes. Whereas Take That, when they come back, they kind of come from nowhere. They're not really part of a scene. They've just paid a bit of attention to what's been popular while they've been gone in the interim, and they've been writing songs and have used them as a framework and a foundation, but just a bit of inspiration as opposed to, we want to sound like this. This just feels like a Take That song which happens to have contemporary comparison points, as opposed to, oh, Gary Barlow's been listening to Embrace, has he? He fancies a bit of a go of that, does he? I kind of see this as the superior material because it accepts that it's a pop song first, as opposed to like, oh no, we're dead serious, we don't make pop. pop? What? What's this dirty word? We're an indie band, I'll have you know. There are lots of great moments in this, but I'm always going to come back to how Barlow rephrases the end of every chorus in this. Because at the end of chorus one, you just get the rephrasing of the first line from the first verse. Just have a little patience. But then in chorus two, you get the just have a little lift patience. Yeah. And then at the end, you get the patience, you know, right at the end. And I kind of like the drop into the final slowdown where it sounds like it's like a mellotron and a guitar kind of quietly sighing away to themselves. But I do like the idea of your rewrite, Andy.
Thank you.
I'm curious to see which one I prefer when I hear them both. But he's quite good with dynamics, I think, sometimes, Gary Barlow. Even if the problem I have with this, and it's the problem I have with basically all of Beautiful World, I alluded to it before, it is a bit too smooth. It is just a bit too perfect. It's a bit too, we are showing our age a bit, so let's kind of just smooth everything out. And I know I said embalming before as a positive, but I do think that there's a little too much polish on this and on the rest of the record. Which is why when I think it comes to something big and showy, like Shine, which is like, you know, it's the fastest song on the album, it's, you know, the most kind of upbeat and positive, if you will, because it's surrounded by quite a lot of plaintive stuff and a lot of, like, quiet things like Mancunian Way and Wooden Boat and my second favourite song from the album, which was I'd Wait for Life. The ballad that Gary Barlow puts together on his own on that one. Shine is good, but I don't like it as much as this, and I won't be putting it in the vault when we get there, because I think that, like this, the polish just, it just takes a little too much edge off. There's a very funny moment in Shine, which I will leave as a surprise for when we get there, that I'm going to mention, that was pointed out to me also by a friend of the podcast, Edward Thomas, and it has to do with Mark Owen's voice on Shine, which we'll get to. I think this sort of thing is also done better on Rule the World, which I think is my favourite of Take That's comeback material. And, yeah, like I said, the production is a bit glossy. It's not as glossy as it gets on The Circus, but it's still a bit too glossy. But I like this a lot. I have kind of gone up and down over it over time. I remember being a huge fan of it as a kid. Really big fan of it as a kid, like, which is strange because I was 12 years old and I was really into Take That. Like, I remember going on a school trip to, apologies, I mean, it's kind of a, I guess so, but the story involves a homophobic slur, shall we say. But I remember walking around Manchester Museum of Science and Industry on a school trip around this time, listening to I'd Wait for Life. And I remember a group of lads from my year coming up behind me going, oh, on your own, are you? What are you listening to? And they grabbed it and they saw it said, I'd Wait for Life by Take That. And they went, oh, well, gay, and then walked off because it was 2006. But the fact that I was a kid being into Take That, I think, and the fact that this was in the charts forever shows that Take That managed to bring a bit of something that we have slightly lost in the last sort of 2 years of chart music, and it can kind of bookend the episode nicely, which is that I do think that this is family pop. It's pop that the whole family can get in on. Kids liked this, adults liked this. It was something that was quite, at the time, just sort of universally popular. Didn't even really have a fan base. It was at number one for 4 weeks and everybody liked it. And everybody was pleased that Take That were back, I think. I remember this album going to number one in the charts as well. And at the time, the album charts, they only did the top five albums. They played a bit of a song from each of the top five albums. But I remember them playing Reach Out, which is the first track on the album. I remember them playing that in full. Which was like an event. It was like, Take That have returned. You know, it's only 9 years. Like, if you think 9 years ago, if a group had gone missing in 2015 and suddenly came back, it wouldn't feel like much of a comeback, would it? It's like, oh, okay, you're back, are you? You know, I don't know. But when Take That came back, it felt like years have passed since we last heard their music, and now they're here. And it was successful. They didn't come back with shite. you know, they came back with music that people enjoyed, that was popular with everybody. And I do think that apart from Rule the World, I think this is probably my second favourite of their comeback songs. Don't think it's the greatest song in the world. Probably won't be in my top five number ones of the year, but 2006 has been an incredibly strong year. And I think that this not making it into my personal top five is a mark of how strong the year has been. Apologies to sort of do a year review a week before time, but 2006, I think, and 2007 are both two very, very, very strong years for number ones. And the fact that next year we get loads of number ones that stick around forever a lot shows that there was a bit of a moment going on in 2007 where it felt like the songs that got to number one were really clicking with people. And this feels like the beginning of it, if you will, because this is 4 weeks and it kind of sets the template for what happens next year. Do either of us or any of us have anything more to say on Patience or Take That? Have we swung you any further in favour of it, Lizzie?
I don't know. I think I'm still quite light on it. But again, like I say, I recognise this is a good song, but it's just not my kind of thing.
All right then, Andy, I will ask you, smack that, vault or pie hole?
I'm smacking that into the pie hole.
And Patience?
No, not quite. It's not in the vault at the moment. I might revisit that at some point in the future, I guess. Take That, we'll have to have a little understanding.
Lizzie, Akon and Eminem, how are we feeling?
I'm going to stick it in a Lamborghini Gallardo and drive it straight into the pie hole. Where it belongs.
And I guess Patience is not
Patience is not going anywhere, no.
Okay. Smack That is sitting on the edge of the pie hole for me. It may tip in when we come back to reviewing the whole year. I'll give it another week and see how I feel. Whereas Patience is just about into the vault for me. Just about creeps in. So well done to Take That for two vaults this week. So that is it for this week's episode. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for voting in your numbers on whether My Chemical Romance or The Scissor Sisters had the best song of the episode 2 weeks ago. And thank you for listening to our 2006 coverage. When we'll be back, we'll be covering The Race for Christmas number one in 2006. Our favourite kinds of episodes, I think, where we get to look back at TV and other stuff. And then we look at which key change The X Factor have offered up to us this year. And there are a lot of them. In the X Factor Winners single for 2006, I counted more than one when I was listening ahead. So we will see you then. Thank you very much for joining in this week. Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.